Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Pesachim Gimel, the second daf of the Masechta. We covered one topic yesterday, and that is the first word of the Mishnah. The Mishnah starts off Or La'arbasar, night of the 14th, so that's the time to do the mitzvah of Bedikas Chametz. We went through Rashi and Tosfos yesterday. What's the purpose of Bedikas Chametz? Chametz, as we pointed out yesterday, has a three-pronged isser. It's not allowed to eat Chametz, and not allowed to benefit from Chametz, and Ba'i Rabbi Yamatze are also not allowed to get you're not allowed to have ownership of chametz. So with these three serim in mind, there's a formula to how to eradicate chametz. That formula for eradicating chametz, so it's also a three-pronged formula in terms of eradication. There's bittul, nullification, which we haven't formally introduced ourselves yet in the Gemara. There is biur, there's destruction, and there's also bedika. On the night of the 14th is when we go out and we look for a chametz to make sure that there's no chametz on our premises. So what's the purpose of bedika? So yesterday, we went through both Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi said, purpose of bedika so that one does not violate Ba'i Rabbi Yamatze. Now that's a difficult pshat of Rashi. As Tosfos points out that that's the whole purpose of bittul. Bittul means I nullified it. Once I nullified it, I'm no longer the owner. So that's why I'm not going to be in violation of Ba'i Rabbi Yamatze. It's not bedika. So what is the purpose of bedika? So Tosfos says the purpose of bedika is so that you won't come to eat it. Meaning even if I'm a vatala, but now I have it on my premises, and it's just sitting around my house, and it's tempting, and as Tosfos points out, you eat it the rest of the year. So what's going to happen is that you're going to stumble out of bed, you're going to wake up early morning, let's say Chol HaMoed already, whatever the case is, sometime for Pesach, and you're going to look at that chametz, and absentmindedly you're going to eat it. So really what you want to do is destroy. Well, before you destroy, you want to search, right? Hence the expression, search and destroy. So the purposes of Bedika, says Tosfos, is so that one would not violate the Isser of Achila. So really what we have over here between Rashi and Tosfos is that for Rashi, Bedika is a preventative of Ba'i Rabbi Yamatze, whereas according to Tosfos, Bedika is a preventative of Lo Sochal, of not eating it, the Isser of Echila. Good. So this is what we went over yesterday, Rashi and Tosfos on the Mishnah. After that, so then it was really one singular discussion that we had in yesterday's daf, and that is the definition of the word or. So when reading the Mishnah, so I correctly explained the Mishnah. The Mishnah is Or La'abasar, which is the night of the 14th. That's when we do the mitzvah bedika. We all know this. We all have been practicing Pesach for some time now. So it's not like a newsflash to us. But meanwhile, of course, the source of it is our Mishnah. Good. So that is has been the discussion in terms of what is the definition of Or. As we started with the Gemara yesterday, so we noted that in the Gemara, so there are presumably two opinions in terms of what Or La'abasar means. The Shita of Rav Huna and the Shita of Rav Yehuda. So Rav Huna, interestingly enough, says, you know what Or means? It means morning, means light. Meaning the morning of the 14th, that's when you do the Bedika. Rav Yehuda says, no, Or means the night. Now, as we know, normally Or doesn't mean night, Or means light. But in the context of the Mishnah, so Or means night. So Rav Yehuda goes with the general assumption that we all made, and that is you do the Bedika on the night of the 14th. Rav Huna's position, a little bit strange, meaning according to Rav Huna, there really is a Shitas Rav Huna that you're supposed to be doing the Bedika the morning of and not the night prior. Okay, so we are going to be discussing that and we're going to be concluding on that matter in this very day. Yesterday, what did we do? We went through a series of Psukim and Brisos. The entire Amud Aleph of yesterday's daf is the Psukim. The Amud Beis yesterday, more Psukim. Whether or not the Psukim are informative of what the word Or means. So or is an adjective that is unquestionable, that the word or as an adjective is light. Now, that goes without saying. What is open for a discussion is what about or the noun? So is or the noun, can it be used as night, like our Mishnah is using it, as suggested by Rav Yehuda? So that's what the Gemara is looking for. Gemara is looking for any kind of sourcing whatsoever where the word or is used as a noun, not as an adjective. And it's used in the context of describing a night, not morning. Good. And so what we did yesterday, after going through all the psukim, is that on the second half of yesterday's daf, second half of second amud of yesterday's daf, so we went through a number of brisos. There were a couple of brisos yesterday, which was pretty clear that the word or in this context, in this reference, is referring to night. Meaning like Rav Yehuda says. Okay. And what we're going to be doing now this morning is we're going to be continuing along this thread. Okay, first half of today's daf, not the entirety of it, but the first half of today's daf is going to be continuation of the definition of the word or. Second half of today's daf, a really great Gemara today in terms of refined language and how people should speak in general. Meisvei, we are picking it up where we left off yesterday. We are on Beis Amud Beis, And the Meitzve Marzutra now challenges based on the following. We have a Mishnah, it's a Braisa, regarding a woman who was given birth. Just as the basic background information, a woman is given birth to a baby. Whether the baby is viable or not, the woman is going to go through a series of tumah. Yemei tumah, yemei tahara. After having given birth to a boy, she's tameh and tahor for 7 days, 33 days. That's a total of 40 days. On her 41st day, she is going to be bringing karbanos. Those karbanos are going to allow her to go back to the base of Mikdash, eat karbanos. Good. If a woman gives birth to a girl, so everything I said, but doubled by two. So that means it's 14 days of tumah, and followed then by 66 days of tahara. Now, when I say tahara, right now I am grossly oversimplifying right now. There is many halachas that are involved over here. Tahor is more like a tefil yom, but for our purposes right now, we're just interested in the language. So I'm just giving the very basics so that we can navigate through the braisa. She'll be tamer for 14 days. She'll be tamer for the next 66 days. That gets her to day 80. On day 81, she's coming to the Beis HaMikdash. She's bringing our karbanos. The karbanos that are outlined in the beginning of Parshas Tazria. Chatas, Ola, good. Okay, now, as far as understanding the braisa and navigating through the braisa, step number two is multiple births. So, if she has, let's say, she has a viable baby, followed then by another viable baby, and whatever, she didn't bring karbanos from the previous baby, so she can't just simply bring one karban for the two babies that she had. She's going to have to bring a set of karbanos for every one of the babies that she has. Okay, that's very straightforward. Here's where it gets a little bit unclear. Well, let's continue with the clarity. Let's say she has a baby. She has a baby girl, and now she's going through 14 days of Yemei Tumah and 66 days of Yemei Tahara. Now it's possible, unlikely, admittedly, but at least it's within the realm of possibility that she will both get pregnant and abort. In other words, there's no way she's going to have a viable baby in those 80 days, but it's at least possible for her to become pregnant and abort a fetus that is going to be minimum 40 days, right? 40-day gestated fetus. So under those circumstances, that also is going to require her to bring a carbon. However, if her miscarriage occurs within the 80 days of the previous one, so then this can be subsumed in the previous, and she'd only have to bring one set of karbanos for the two. Okay, that is the basic halacha. If, however, her miscarriage came after the 80th day, meaning on the 81st day or onward, so then she's going to have to bring two sets of karbanos, one for the previous and one for the unfortunate miscarriage that she had. Okay. This is the very basic halacha. And now, where is the Mishnah taking us? What if she had rachmanos? What if she had a miscarriage on the eve of the 81st day? So, machlokes between Meshamah and Beis Hillel, and here we are now in the Mishnah and Eidos. Right? The Mishnayos and Eidos give testimony of various positions. The middle of the Masechta, right, the fourth and, if I'm not mistaken, hopefully I'm correct, the fourth and fifth parak of Eidos. So it deals with all the machlokes in between Meshamah and Beis Hillel. So here we are now in the fourth parak of Eidos, and the machlokes between Meshamah and Beis Hillel. So a woman who miscarries on the eve of day 81. Now, the obvious note over here, and we'll just pause for a moment just to observe, that when describing the eve of the 81st day, so what's the word that's used in the Braisa? Or, just like our Mishnah, okay, that's really it. Meaning, obviously, we're going to go through the Braisa and we're going to try to give shot in the Braisa, but you understand the whole reason why we quoted the Braisa is because the usage of the language of or right over here. So, to finish off the braisa. So a woman who Rachmanos had miscarried on day 81 after having had a girl, right? 81 days ago, well, 80 days ago in a night. So now she miscarries on the eve of the 81st day. So Beit Shammai Apotrim, Mei Karban Beit Shammai says she is going to be exempt from bringing an additional karban. Beisil Mechayvin, and Beisil says no, she has to bring a karban now for this miscarriage. So Amr Beisil Beit Shammai. So here a dialogue between Beisil and Beit Shammai and a direct attack from Beisil to Beit Shammai. And so Beis Hillel says to Beit Shammai, look, at this point in time, we're resetting in terms of Tumah, meaning that once she has a miscarriage at this point in time, she's now going to have to go through the entire process of Tumah Tahara. If she had a boy, it'll be a total of 40 days, 40 additional days. If she had a girl, a total of 80 days. But in other words, the clock gets reset. So if it's going to get reset for Tumah, so shouldn't it get reset also for carbon as well? So that seems to be a very strong argument from Beis Hillel to Beis Shammai. Now for more on this dialogue, you can see Rashi over here, right? Rashi actually goes through the Gemara. The Gemara discusses this in Krisus in terms of what would be the back and forth between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. And good. And I encourage you to take a look at Rashi afterwards. But meanwhile, for our purposes right now, we're looking at the language of the Braisa. So now, when Beis Hillel says to Beis Shammai, what's the difference between or Shmonim Ve'Echad from the Yom Shmonim Ve'Echad? So it's clear from the context that the word or over here is being used in the context of night. So Shmamina or Tahu Shmamina. So this is really a very clear raya that the word or in this context means night. And so over here in our Mishnah as well, same thing. Our Mishnah opens up with the words or la barasar, so that means night. Okay, let's continue. Meisve, the Gemara challenges again with another brisa, yochli ye nechel or lishlishi. I might have thought that I can eat my carbon shlamim on the eve of the third day. So vidinu, carbon shlamim we know has an allowance to eat for 2 days. The day that you shech the carbon shlamim and the day following as well. Right now what the Gemara is proposing is that at least from a havamina standpoint, so let's say I bring the carbon on a Tuesday, so I can eat it Tuesday, the night, Wednesday, right, the eve of Wednesday, or Tuesday night, if you will, and I can eat it Wednesday. Right now, we have a havamina that we could also eat it Wednesday night as well. That's the yachol. Yachol, yenechol, or l'shishav adinu, and the Gemara says, and look, let's make the following argument. Zvachim nechal l'yom echad, u'shlamim nechal l'shnei yamim. Let's compare shlamim to a carbon where you only are allowed to eat it for 1 day. Let's say, for example, a chatas, or an asham. Chatzas and Hashem, you have 1 day allowance to eat it. So now, on a standard Chatzas and Hashem, so what is it? It's the day that you shecht it and the night following. So a Shlamim is eaten 2 days. So the Gemara says, so let's make the following deduction. So when it comes to Chatzas and Hashem, so it's the day and the night following that day. So by Shlamim, if it's 2 days, so shouldn't it stand to reason that it also should be the 2 nights following those 2 days? And so if I brought my shlamim on a Tuesday, so then I should be allowed to eat it on Tuesday night, Wednesday night. That's the proposal. So Tamalam Rabbi Yom Zvachachem, Yochal Umi Macharas, Vahanosar Ad Yom. So Be'od Yom Unechal Ve'inu Nechal La'or Shlishi. So we have a drasha, meaning it may sound good in terms of logic and reason, but the drasha tells us very clearly that no, that you're only allowed to eat it on day one and then the night following, and only on day two, and not the night subsequent to day two. Yachli, you start with miyad, now the Gemara says, fine. So now we know that if I brought my shlamim on a Tuesday, so I could eat it Tuesday night, I could eat it Wednesday night, I'm no longer allowed to eat it. So here's now what you would have thought, we're up to our next avamina, and that is that Wednesday night, it's already declared to be nosar. And therefore, I could burn it already on Wednesday night. The Gemara says, vidinu, zvachim nechal miyam v'layla echad, ushlamim nechal l'shnei yamim v'layla echad. So once again, we're going to do our comparison between a zevach, meaning a chatzis or nashem, versus a shlamim. Chatzis and nashem are eaten for 1 day and 1 night. Shlamim are eaten for 2 days and 1 night. So ma lahalan tekev la'achila sreifa, avkan tekev la'achila sreifa. We know what happens with the carbon chatzis. So if you fail to finish it, the day that you offer it, plus the night afterwards, if you fail to finish it at that point in time, so the moment that there's an isra of achila, now there is a heter, not a heter, but a mitzvah to burn it as nosar, as leftover. So now I would have said the same thing regarding a shlamim. Once we've established that the mitzvah to eat the shlamim only extends to the second day, but not to the night following the second day, so now a very legitimate havamina in which I should be able to burn it now the night immediately following. Good. That's the din. That's the reason. That's the logic. So tamalam rav anosam yibisar hazevach, bayom ha-shlishi ba'ish yisarev, Bayam ata saref yata saref sarfa balayla. So now you have to wait until the following morning. Meaning, as nosar, it can only be burnt on the morning, in our example, on Thursday morning. And only Thursday morning can it be burnt as nosar. So it's a little bit odd now. It comes out now that as far as Wednesday night is concerned, so Wednesday night, on one hand, there's an isra achila. On the other hand, it does not yet have the status of nosar. So where does it stand between Wednesday night and Thursday morning? Some halachic limbo. I'm not really sure how to articulate it, but what I can say clearly, what the Gemara just said, which is that there's an Isra Achila, but at the same time, however, you can't burn it as Nosar. Now, again, the whole purpose of us going through this Braisa is because the language of the Braisa, And the Gemara notes, midakamar yenochal or lishlishi. I might have thought that I should be eating it on the night of the third. And what word is used to describe night? That's correct. It's or. Ama or to shmamina. So we have another proof over here that the word or means night when used in the context of the Mishnayos when describing an actual time of day. So Tashma in the Gemara says, and not only that, I'll give you a very another clear raya. Or shel yom ha-kippurim. On the evening of Yom Kippur, mispalel sheva u'misvadeh. So your Shmoneh Esrei is going to be made up of seven brachos. The three standard first ones, although that's not perfectly accurate, because the third bracha is going to be embellished like it is on Rosh Hashanah. Then it's going to be the three standard concluding brachos, the Hoda'ah, and then the one central bracha for Yom Kippur. Also, there's vidui. Okay, where's vidui added? So it depends on whether or not we're talking about the Tfilas Yachid or the Chazar Sashas. Tfilas Yachid, vidui is placed at the end of Shmoneh Esrei, after Shmoneh Esrei. In the Chazar Sashas, it's placed in the center. Okay. Shachris, Mispal, Sheva, Umizvade. Same thing with Shachris. Your Shmoneh Esrei is made up of seven brachas with vidui. Musaf, Mispal, Sheva, Umizvade. Musaf, same thing. Seven brachas with vidui. Mincha, Mispal, Sheva, Umizvade. Mincha, same thing. Seven brachas and vidui. Ba'arvis. Now we're talking about Ma'ariv on Motzei Yom Kippur. So Mitzvah Me'ein Shmona Asar. So now you daven Shmona Esrei, but a condensed and abridged version of Shmona Esrei. Right? It's been a long day. We haven't eaten the whole day. So so according to the Tanakhama, a condensed version of Shmona Esrei. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Omer Mishum Avosav. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, according to his father, says no Mitzvah Shmona Asar. Shleimos Mimnei Shetzarech Lamar Havdala Bechonein Hadas. No. You have to say a full Shmoneh Esrei for Ma'ariv and Motzei Yom Kippur. Why? Because you need to say Havdalah in Chonein Hadas. And so since Havdalah is a necessity, it cannot be put into the condensed Shmoneh Esrei. And so that's why we have to say the full Shmoneh Esrei at the conclusion of Ma'ariv. And of course that's the halacha, is that we say a full Shmoneh Esrei and Motzei Yom Kippur because we have to add in Atachonein. Atachonantanu in Atachonein. Right? The obvious question, a fair question to ask over here is, why can't we just add a Tochanan Tanu into the condensed Shmoneh Esrei? So the Rishonim speak like this. Because when it comes to the condensed Shmoneh Esrei, every phrase in the condensed Shmoneh Esrei really amounts to a bracha. Meaning that our assumption in the condensed Shmoneh Esrei is that every bracha is going to be represented by a single phrase. If we add a phrase for Atachonan Tanu, so one may mistakenly think that the Atachonan Tanu actually represents an independent bracha. Now that's not true. Atachonan Tanu is incorporated into Atachonein. So that's why Atachonan Tanu cannot just be enveloped into the abridged version of Shmoneh Esrei. And that explains the Shita Rabbi Chanin ben Gamliel. Why are we discussing this Braisa? So hopefully at this point in time you figured it out. Ama or tahu shmamina. Look at the beginning of the Braisa. Look at the first wide line. It says, or shal yom ha-kippurim. It's clear in the Braisa that the context over there is talking about the night of Yom Kippur, and it's called or. So tashma. The Gemara wants to do this one more time. Didni debei Shmuel. We learned in the Braisa of Shmuel. Eile arba'a asar botken es chametz l'or haner. On the night of the 14th, you check for chametz l'or haner. Now, why is this Braisa significant? Because it's describing the mitzvah of bedikas chametz. And what word is it used to describe the bedika? Laila. Now, that's unequivocal. That's as clear as could be. That's a reference to the night. So now we're going to work backwards. We know what the halach is. The halach is bedikas chametz is done at night. So then when you go back to our Mishnah, you take a look at the first word of our Mishnah. So the word or over there clearly is a reference to night. Ama or tohu. So it's clear that the word or over there in our Mishnah is a reference to night. In other words, the Braisa is supplementing the Mishnah. The Braisa is not arguing with the Mishnah. It's clarifying the Mishnah. And so it's pretty clear. More than pretty clear. It's very clear that the word or used in our Mishnah is referring to the eve of the 14th. So Ella ben Rav Huna ben Rav Yehuda dekuleyama or tohu. So now daf and a half, a little bit less. But now the Gemara is going to change its original premise, and we knew this was going to happen. Meaning, go back to yesterday's daf, go back to the beginning of the Gemara where the Gemara introduced the two positions. My or, what is the or? And the Gemara says Rav Huna amanagi Rav Yehuda amar lele kasalka daska. So the Gemara says now at this point in time we think. Now, generally speaking, how long do Havaminas last in the Gemara? A couple lines, right? Maybe a short paragraph. Okay, this is a long Havamina, admittedly. This Havamina lasted for a blot and then some. Okay, And for those who've been around Gemara long enough, so you know, the Gemara likes to meander, meaning in the course of meandering. So we went over so many different halachas and so many different areas of Torah. So and it really compiled all the areas in Shas where we have the word or. So this is a Bavli. The Bavli does not mind the stroll through halacha and the stroll through Shas. So the Gemara says, good. So now that the Havamina has been rejected, so now we're in the Maskana. And the Maskana is both Amoraim are clearly of the opinion that the Bedikah is done on the night of the 14th, the Laila. And below Peligi Mar Ki Asre, Ba'asre de Rav Huna Kari Nage, Ba'asre de Rav Yehuda Kari Leile. Each one of them is just simply speaking in the manner that they're used to in their community. So in the community of Rav Huna, so he refers to night as Nage. Now, Nage means light and illumination. So, euphemistically, that's how they spoke about light. In Rav Yehuda, they called it Laila. In other words, what people normally call it. Okay. So that is the shitas of Rav Yehuda, which is basically no machlokas. Or la'arbasar means that we do bedika on the night of the 14th. Good. All this brings us to the question, which probably you were wondering since the moment we started this discussion. So v'tani didan maitam alo katani laila. So our Mishnah over here is trying to teach us a halacha. When you're speaking halacha, you would like to be as clear as possible. Right? That's my attempt, is to be as clear as possible. And so therefore, why work with any kind of ambiguity whatsoever? The Mishnah over here is trying to communicate to us that the night, the time to do Bedikas Chametz is the night of the 14th. Lel Arba Asar. And so, if the Mishnah was interested in giving us something which was perfectly unambiguous, it would have said Lel Arba Asar. But instead the Mishnah says Or Lel Arba Asar, engendered a lot of discussion, although we do have a conclusion, a very clear conclusion, that it means the night of. But why would the Mishnah do that? Why would the Mishnah speak in a language that is at best ambiguous, and it's quite frankly even a little bit misleading? So the Gemara says, Lishna ma'alya hu dinaka. So the Gemara says that what the Mishnah would like to do is speak in refined language. Uch de Rav Yeshua ben Levi, damar Rav Yeshua ben Levi. And now this brings us to our second half of today's daf. And in day two, in the second part of today's daf, a discussion of refined language, and that is the idea to speak as nicely as possible, as dignified as possible. Now, in this discussion that we're about to start, so it goes without saying, although the Gemara elsewhere speaks about it more clearly, in that, of course, no profanity. But in addition to no profanity, meaning even in a non-profane language, still the language that one chooses and elects to speak should be one which is regal, dignified, and refined. And so therefore, if you could say something positive and nice, so that's the way you should say it. Now, the Gemara in a moment is going to point out that we do lose out in speaking in such language, right? Case in point, right? We had a slight ambiguity in our Mishnah, but still the idea of speaking in a refined language, so that's paramount. The Gemara here quotes Rav Yeshua ben Levi. Let's continue the Gemara. Amar Rav Yeshua ben Levi, la'olam ha'yotzi adam davar mekuna b'piv. A person should not say anything which is inappropriate. Shari alka makasav shmoni osios v'lo hotzi davar mekuna b'piv. Look what the Torah did. The Torah, which is looking for obviously perfection in language, the Torah is perfection in language. Torah Hashem Tamima. And meanwhile, what the Torah does is the Torah adds letters just so that it speaks more refinedly. Shenemar, Noach is introducing the animals into the Teva. Mina behema tohora, mina behema asher inena tohora. So the Pasuk says that Noach introduced animals which are tahor and animals which are not tahor. Now, quite frankly, as we all know, Noach wasn't holding by kashrus. Yes, it's true, one of the shevements was b'nei Noach is Evrim and Achai, but that just simply means not to rip a limb off of a live animal. But in terms of segregating animals from being kosher versus non-kosher, so that's a you and I thing. That's a b'nei Yisrael imperative. But as far as Noach is concerned, but still he was given the information so that there'd be a distinction between animals which are tahor, meaning kosher, and animals which are not kosher. But the Torah says very clearly, instead of saying tamea, it says umin behema asher einenu tahora. Now you count up the letters, and it comes out now that in order for the Torah to do that, it had to add an additional 8 letters. Okay, you count it up. It counted out. I did. It works. Rav Papa Amar Teisha, Rav Papa says, I'll give an example where the Torah had to add 9 letters. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Ki yeh b'chayish lo yeh, I'm sorry, Ki yeh b'chayish ashir lo yeh tahor, Mikra Laila. A person who is not tahor, he had a seminal discharge at night. So once again, ashir lo yeh, so he counted up, that's 9 extra letters instead of saying just simply the word tameh. Ravina Mar Eser, Ravina says that it comes out that I'll give you an example where it's 10 extra letters, and it's not an extraneous example. It's actually the very same example. Vav de tahor. Because look at the word tahor. Tahor is made up of 4 letters. In other words, it's a male, which may mean that according to Rav Papa, it's a chaser. Could be. Right? The Gemara in Kiddushin says that we are not experts on the Aseris and the Chesronos. Right? We don't have absolute certainty. Obviously, our Sefer Torah, we have a accepted Mesorah in terms of which words are male, which words are chaser, but there is some variance in the Gemara Kedushin. Says very clearly that we don't have an expertise on this matter. So anyway, and the Gemara Kedushin was discussing that in the context of knowing what the middle letter is of the Torah, all right, what the middle word is of the Torah, and because we don't have precision in terms of what's male and what's chaser, so therefore it's going to be for us a significant challenge. Anyway, according to the example of Ravina, the word Torah is male, meaning it has a vav in it, and so therefore tummy, which only has 3 letters, so that gives you another letter that was needed to be put in order to use a refined language of ashir lo yeh tahor, right? In not being tahor as opposed to saying tummy. Rav Yaakov says, I'll give you an example where if we're talking about 16 letters, shenemar. Ki amar mikra hu bilti tahor hu ki lo tahor. Okay, when describing why David was absent from the seuda that Shaul had, so a whole bunch of words used to describe that he's tameh, but we don't want to say that he was tameh. The navi didn't want to say that he was tameh, so the navi added a series of words, which comes out to a total. Again, count it up. It comes out to a total of 16 extra letters, just to have refined language. Tanya debay Rabbi Yishmael lo lamisaper adam b'lashon nekiyah. Debay Rabbi Yishmael also taught the same thing as well. A person should speak in the most refined manner possible. La'olam yisaper adam b'lashon nekiyah sharei b'zav karo mirkav v'vishya karo moshav. The Torah says, the Gemara says, I'll give you a very simple example. Whenever the Torah describes a man riding on an animal, so the word is mirkav, rochev, which means that basically you are straddling the animal. But when it comes to a woman, uvisha kara moshav, the imagery of saddling the animal, just not appropriate. So therefore the Torah's usage of the language is moshav, which means that the woman is sitting modestly on the animal. Va'omer v'tivacher lashon haromim, and on top of that, the pasuk in Iyov, that you should choose your words wisely. And va'omer in another pasuk, also from Iyov, v'das yifsei barur milalu. When speaking, you should speak in a manner that is knowledgeable and refined. Okay, my va'omer. The drasha over here, meaning after giving the example of Mishkav versus Moshav, after giving the example of Merkav versus Moshav, and then we have a couple of supplemental pesukim. What's the need of those supplemental pesukim? V'chitem animila b'daraisa. Yeah. So as far as the Torah is concerned, the Torah speaks b'lashon nekiyah. Ava b'derabanan lo, but maybe the chachamim don't find this to be a value. So tashma v'omer v'tivacher lashon arumim. So the second pasuk is there to teach us that lashon chachamim is also lashon nekiyah. V'chitem animila b'derabanan va b'mila d'amalo. Okay, so fine. So mila chachamim, so the refined language. But just general conversation between people, v'omer v'dasif say, barur milalu. So that's the next pasuk in Iyov that tells us that even in casual conversation, there should be refined language. Okay. When going back, if we just for a moment, right? The Gemara in just a second is going to tackle the issue that we do find the Torah describing a woman straddling an animal. But we're going to come back to that in just a moment. But Rashi points out over here that as far as this the usage of language has to be refined. So what was our first example describing animals kosher and non-kosher? So some animals are going to be tar and other animals are going to be tamei, but the pasuk in Parshas Noach doesn't want to use the word tamei, so therefore it says tahor. So Rashi says, saying the word tamei is not a davar maguna, meaning even as we're having this discussion of refined language, obviously there are gradations in what is considered, quote-unquote, foul language, or let's say unrefined language, right, to use the word tameh as opposed to tahor. So Rashi himself writes that's obviously that is not the most unrefined thing that you could say. The and in fact, Rav Yeshua ben Levi, he was making the more generic statements as Rashi about how the language that you use should be chosen to be extraordinarily refined. And but Rashi says, but still the point is made. Meaning by virtue of the fact that the Torah goes out of its way to elect a language that is even more refined, so that gives us now the basis, the source, in which it teaches us that under all circumstances, and it goes without saying, but we're saying it, is that if I'm definitely using a language that's unrefined, so choose not to use that language and use a more refined language. Now, one of the examples that we just gave is that when the Torah describes a woman riding on an animal, so you're going to see the term Moshev used, which is a modest way to present the woman on the animal, not Merkav, because that's just simply slightly less modest. The Gemara just notes now, as we're on the bottom of Gimel and Aleph, that's not always accurate. Uvisha loksiv ba Merkav aksiv. Gemara says, I'll give you a couple of examples. Vatakam Rivka v'narasav v'tirkavna ala gemalim. Go back to Parshas Chayisara. Rivka is described as riding on the gemalim. Okay, that's clear. So hasam yishum b'yisusa de gemalim orchehi. So the Gemara says, yeah, it's true, it's clear, but at the very same time, however, when you ride a camel, there's no other right way to ride a camel. Okay, right? I'm sure if anyone went to Eretz Yisrael, I'm sure you've experienced it. I've experienced it myself. It's frightening, right? Especially when that camel lurches forward. Okay, it's really frightening. Anyway, good. So if you have the experience, so you know that riding a camel is riding a camel is something where it's so frightening. The Torah is just giving the honest depiction of what you're going to do, and that is you're going to straddle the camel so that you are more secure in your seat. Vaksiv, the Gemara says, okay, but another example, Vikach Moshe, Yishtav es banav, Vayikivem al chamor. So here we have a description of Moshe setting up everyone on donkeys. Donkeys are not frightening animals. Riding a donkey is not frightening. And meanwhile, Moshe's wife, Moshe's sons, so they're being Merkav al chamor, Vayikivem al chamor. That's difficult. So the Gemara says, Hasam. The Gemara says, yeah, that's true, it's difficult, but over there, Mishum banav orchahu. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the reason why the word Merkav is used is because his sons are included over there. So the word Merkav is more a description of his sons than his wife. Vaksiv v'hiro cheves ala chamor. So the Gemara says, okay, but in Shmuel Aleph, when describing Avigail riding on a donkey, the word rocheves is used over there. So the Gemara says, that's true, but Hasam Mishum b'yisusa delilah. Orchahu, first of all, it could be that she was riding at night, so she was scared, and so therefore it is typical to straddle in order to get more secure. Ibaisem mishum b'yisusa delilah, or could be that it's nighttime. I'm sorry, I read that. I'm sorry. Ibaisem mishum b'yisusa delilah leika, mishum b'yisusa de David ika. Or on the other hand, Avigal was visiting David HaMelech, and so therefore Yiras HaMelech. Maybe that's made her more scared and more concerned. And so therefore, the Torah describes it as, the Navi describes it as saddling. Or maybe she was just simply going up terrain. And so therefore, it was a more perilous ride. And so therefore, the Navi describes her as straddling. Now, the question which you probably were thinking about from the moment we started this discussion. Noach introduces the animals into the Teva. You know, bring in the animals that are Tahor, and bring in the animals that are einenu tahara. Ah, you see that the Torah goes out of its way not to use the word tameh. And now the Gemara asks a question you probably were wondering, and that is, really, the Torah never uses the word tameh? The Torah always uses the word tameh. So the Gemara says, you're right. Of course the Torah uses the word tameh. But, all things being equaled, so then, skip on the on the refinement and go with brevity. Other way around. If everything being equal, so then work with the refinement. And kol hecha de nefishimili mishay b'loshin katsara. If, however, being more refined means that there's going to be a lack of brevity, so then brevity is going to outweigh it. The kedamar rav huna amarava amrila amar rav huna amar mishum rabbi meir. So the Gemara has a masorah that could go back to rabbi meir, which is la'olam ishana adam latamido. Derech Kitzara. When teaching to your student, make sure to be right to the point. Rashi writes over here, Derech Kitzara. The I'm sorry. Rashi over here is going to make 2 points. Now let me go in the order of the Rashi. You can take a look at the second line, Rashi Chol Hecha. So Rashi, first point Rashi is going to make is as follows. We just learned in the Gemara that all things being equal, refine language. If, however, you're sacrificing brevity, don't sacrifice brevity, and be shortened to the point. So Rashi says, and what about the examples that we gave on the Amud Aleph? So the first part of Rashi addresses that. And Rashi writes, V'hani delal, I came, l'lam d'chashatzarach, l'chazer echa lashan naki. Uvisham and komas k'siv lashan maguna, v'katzer, l'lam d'chashishana adam l'tamido, lashan k'tzara. So the first point Rashi makes is, what happened the first time where we did sacrifice brevity? So Rashi points out that the Torah wants to teach us two values. One value the Torah wants to teach us is that we should be speaking Lashon Nekiyah. We should speak with a refined language. And yes, it's true in Parshas Noach. We did sacrifice brevity. But we want to show, the Torah wants to tell us that the idea of refined language is an absolute value. Then, afterwards, from that point going forward, so then we weigh. If all things being equal, refinement. If we're going to be sacrificing brevity, so then brevity. And then Rashi points out, and why is it so important to get right to the point? Rashi writes, just continuing the same Rashi, because if you're to the point that your people are going to remember it better and easier, right? You're packaging it better. You're organizing it better. You're just simply being more concise. We continue in the Gemara. Gemara is going to go through a slew of more examples. We are v'cholhecha. V'cholhecha d'chiyadadi eninu mishtai b'lashen kavod. So the Gemara says, when all things being equal, so the Torah elects to use with a refined language, v'ha rocheves, v'yosheves d'chiyadadi eninu v'kama rocheves. So the Gemara says, yeah, but we have the word rocheves as opposed to yosheves, and they're the same number in length, and meanwhile, the Torah used the word rocheves. Now, over there, you didn't sacrifice brevity, and yet the Navi opted to go with the less refined language. What's happening over there? So the Gemara says, Rocheves Ksiv. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the word Rocheves, when written, is written Chaser, without the Vav, and so therefore the Navi did save a letter. Now, why not just simply write the word Yosheves without a Vav? Okay, that's a wonderful question, and Rashi addresses that as well. You can see Rashi, Debra Maschel Rocheves Ksiv, where Rashi, he writes, I'll read the Rashi. So Rashi says that every time the Torah deviates from its normal language, it's to make a point. And over here, the point is that because we are sacrificing, because we would have been sacrificing brevity, we didn't want to sacrifice brevity, and that's why the Torah wrote Rechevis without a Vav. Okay, the logic of Rashi is a little bit circular over here, but anyway, but still the basic point has been made. The Gemara tells a number of stories regarding the significance of speaking in a refined language. Two students were sitting in front of Rav, and Chanamar Shevisan Hai Shmaita Kedvar Acher Misankan. And they just went through a very tough shir. Each one of the students is describing the tough shir. He says, basically, either the shir or we're a tired pig. Now that's a strange way to describe a shir. That's a strange analogy. And obviously, the Gemara, by the way, uses the word davar acher, meaning the Gemara itself is exercising this idea of speaking b'lashon nekiyah. The Gemara doesn't even want to say it, right? I'll say it just to be clear. But anyway, the davar acher over here is also a lashon nekiyah. But anyway, right? One of the students said, I'm like a tired pig. And the other one says, I'm like a tired goat. Okay, so each one is expressing exhaustion after a really tough shir, but the first one compared it to a devar acher. Rav did not converse with the first one. Seemingly, that's the pshat in the Gemara, meaning the first one spoke belasha maguna, an unrefined language, and so therefore Rav didn't talk to him. Okay. Hani chay tamida davi asvikama de hillel. V'chad minayu Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Two students were in front of Hillel. One of them was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. The Gemara, as per the Gemara in Sukkah, describing the many students of Hillel, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai being one of them. Right, end of the second paragraph, if I'm correct. The Amrilei kamed Rebbe, or another version is that you had students in front of Rebbe. V'chad minayu Rabbi Yochanan. One of the students was Rav Yochanan. And so we have different versions of exactly who was participating in the story, but the story goes as follows. Charamar mimnei bosim b'tahara, v'in moskin b'tahara, v'charamar mimnei bosim b'tahara, moskin b'tuma. Now over here, this is a discussion regarding the halachas of machshirin. Any liquid that comes into contact with the food now will make the food muchan u'mukhshir l'kabel tuma. Now the food now is susceptible to become tummy once it comes into contact with any one of the seven liquids. We're talking about the harvesting of grapes and the harvesting of olives. Now when it comes to the harvesting of grapes, botrim b'tahara, meaning that the juice that oozes out of the grapes, so that is considered grape juice, and that serves as a machshir. As opposed to when you're harvesting the olives, the juice that comes out of the olives, that juice doesn't interest you, and so therefore it isn't beratzon, and therefore that liquid coming out is not going to be a machshir. Okay, basic differences between harvesting grapes and harvesting olives. And the question was, well, what's the difference? Now, we're not interested in the answer right now. What we're interested in is the way the students framed the question. So one of them said, Mimnei ma botsim b'tahara ve'in moskin b'tahara. So he phrased it in a way where he did not have to say the word tumah. And the other one said, Mimnei ma botsim b'tahara moskin b'tumah. Right, Betzira, by the way, is on the grapes, and the Masika is on the olives. But anyway, and the other student said, why? It's the same question, but he asks, why do we have to harvest grapes in a state of tahara? Why is it that we harvest olives? We could be in a state of tumah, because again, the juice that comes out of the olives is not a machshir, and so the olives are just simply impervious to tumah. Okay, that's the question. But right now we're looking at the phrasing of the question and which of the students was able to phrase the question without using the word tumah. Amar, now we have two versions of the story, so it's either Hillel or Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. But whichever version, Amar Muftachani Bezesh, Shemar HaRabbi Yisrael. So I know that the one who used more refined language, he's going to be a Mara Hora. And only a few days went by, in other words, a short amount of time, where in fact he was a Mara Hora, for using such refined language. There were three Kohanim. Chanamar, and each one was describing how much of the lechem upon him they received. Chanamar, I got the amount of the lechem upon him, the size of a bean. Chanamar, higini kezayitz. The other one says, I got the volume of an olive. Chanamar, higiana kizanav halta'a. You know how much I got? I basically got a rat's tail's worth of the lechem upon him. Now the halta'a, one of the shmona shratzim. So of all the things that he's comparing his size of the lechem upon him that he received to, so he's comparing it to something which is not refined. He's not speaking in a refined language. Badku acharav matzav bo shemetz psul. And so what they did a background check on that kohen who spoke in such unrefined language. So a quick background check, and the man does not check out. They found that he had lineage that was psul. Now the Gemara says, now I have a technical problem over here, and that is Vatanan. We learned in the Mishnah, in Bokim and Mizbech Lamala. Every Kohen already goes through a background check. Once they're doing the Avoda, so that's it. In other words, there's no longer a background check that's done after the original interview and the original background. So in other words, they go through an initial vetting, and after that, that's it. So what are we doing over here? So good. So our Kohen spoke in an unrefined language. So we get to open up the file again. The Gemara is bothered by that technical problem. So the Gemara says, "Lo tam Hashem, it's psul, ela em Hashech, it's psul." So the Gemara has two ways to respond to this. Number one is that, no, what we mean to say is that we're not doing another background check on him, meaning, you're right, the file is closed, and from this point going forward, he has yichus. It just simply means now that the way he spoke shows us a poor disposition of this individual. And so, not shemetz psul, meaning talking about his yichus, but rather shechetz psul. He's arrogant, and the way he speaks is unrefined. That's all we're saying. V'ibay same or the Gemara says, or maybe not. Maybe we will reopen the file. And that is shani asam di'iu da'arad na'nafshei. Look, generally speaking, once we vet, and once we establish that the yichus is good, so that's it, the file now is closed. However, if he behaves in a way which is really, really poor, he's making very poor decisions, so that gives us the opportunity to reopen the file. That's the second approach of the Gemara. Okay. We're in Gimel Amud Beis. We are towards the bottom of the Amud, And now we're going to be covering one of the more famous stories that comes up over here in Pesachim. Okay, it's Daf Gimel. I know it's early in the Mesechta, but I would guess, and probably correctly, you've heard the story before. There was a non-Jew who was eating carbon Pesach in Yerushalayim. This is during Bayit Sheni. Amar, and so not only is he doing something that he's totally not allowed to do, but he's flaunting it. See, the pasuk says, "Kol beneichar lo yichabo." The Torah says that a beneichar cannot eat from the carbon Pesach. V'chol arel lo yochal bo. And if you are uncircumcised, you can't eat the carbon Pesach. V'ana ha'ka'achina mishufrei shufrei. I eat carbon Pesach. He says, "I'll do you one better. I eat from the best of the carbon Pesach." So Amar le Rabbi Yehuda ben Bezerra mika safu le me'alya. So this conversation now, I must have had it with a bunch of people, but now he's repeating this to Rabbi Yehuda ben Bezerra. And he says to him, let me ask you a simple question. Carbon Pesach, did they give you from the tail of the carbon Pesach? Amar le lo. So he said, no, they didn't give me from the tail. Curious. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Bezerra says, good. So ki salikta lahasam emalu safu le me'alya. So the next time that you go to Yerushalayim on Pesach, eating Karm Pesach, so do me a favor. You'll ask for the tail. It's going to be delicious. You're going to love it. And you're only going to thank me afterwards. Okay, I'm embellishing, obviously. But hopefully everyone here knows where we're going with the story. Ki Salik, he goes to Yerushalayim, Amar Lo Malia Safali. And now he makes the request. And he says, look, do me a favor. Give me the tail. Now, if you happen not to know, so the Alia, the tail, of the two types of animals that can be brought as a carbon Pesach, this is coming up later in the Masechta, it could either be a sheep or it could be a goat. And the truth of the matter is that the tail of the goat is not brought up onto the Mizbeach, but as Tosfos points out over here, most of the time it's a sheep that's being offered. And so the tail of the sheep is one of the Imurim that's put up onto the Mizbeach. Nobody eats the tail. Nobody's allowed to eat the tail. Now, Rav Yehuda ben Bezerra, obviously, this was all a setup. And so now, once he's in the Beis HaMikdash asking for the tail, so now, this is a red flag, right? The alarms are going off. Armor lay, they say to him, Ayala gavo salka. Well, what's going on over here? The tail that goes up onto the Mizbeach. Armor lay, they say to him, Man amala chachi. So they asked him, who asked you to ask for the tail? Amalu Rav Yehuda ben Bezerra. So his response is, this was advice given to me by Rav Yehuda ben Bezerra. And I'll embellish one more time. And is everything okay? And no, everything's not okay. So Amru, my high to come on. So they said, well, this is really strange. In other words, red flags. So Badku, Basrei, they did a background check on this guy. Ashkechu Darmahu, they found out he was non-Jew. Vekalu, and they killed him. Shachul El Rav Yehuda ben Bezerra, they sent the following message to Rav Yehuda ben Bezerra. Shalom Lecha Rav Yehuda ben Bezerra, peace be upon you. Dab Mitzivin, Umitzuda Sech Prusa Yerushalayim. So you're out in the town of Netzivim, and meanwhile your net is ensnaring in Yerushalayim. Basically, they sent him a message, which is job very well done. Okay. This small story over here, so much to discuss in this little story. Okay, number one, they killed the non-Jew for eating Karm Pesach, right? He's Chayv Misa. So this is discussed and deliberated, not in the Gemara, not even so much by the Rishonim, but it is discussed in terms of why. If I could send you to a really good source for this, so Hegyonei Halacha, written by Rav Mirsky. So he has a piece on this entire section over here, and he takes you through the various approaches in terms of understanding how it is that they justified them killing him, and then the other issue, which we'll discuss now, it's on the daf, and that is a simple question. Karm Pesach, right, Psachim, the mitzvah of Aliyah Larego, where's Rav Yehuda ben Bezerra? So it's clear in the story that he was not in Yerushalayim. He was in Netzivim. Why isn't he in Yerushalayim? Why isn't he offering Karban Pesach? So good. So Tosfos is bothered by the second to last Tosfos on the Amud. So right, four lines down the Tosfos. Rav Yehuda ben Bezerra shelo ala l'regel. So why wasn't he ola l'regel? Right? Every male Jew has a mitzvah of ali l'regel. So yesh lama shelo hayalo karka. So Tosfos over here brings out a couple of suggestions. Number one, he wasn't a landowner, and there will be evidence later on, not in our Masechta, but anyway, there's going to be evidence later on that to be chayv in the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel, you need land. Oh, zakein haya sheinu yachol lahalech b'raglav, depater mi Pesach, kamo meri'iyah, or maybe because of his age, maybe he was old, and so that gave him an exemption. Inami Tosfos also offers, and Stephen Chutz Artzi, that Netzivan actually was in Chutz Aretz, and when you're in Chutz Aretz, so you're going to be exempt. You are now B'derech Rechoka. Maybe that's what Tosus over here is referencing. Anyway, Tosus throws out a lot of answers, right? As a general rule, more answers you see, more problematic each answer is. But anyway, and Tosus in general over here is extraordinarily difficult based on the fact that Tosus is only explaining why he didn't do the mitzvah of Alila Regal. Okay, so that's in general, meaning that's of the three regalim. But here, we're not just talking about any regal, we're also talking about Pesach, which means that there's a mitzvah of Karban Pesach. So these exemptions may be true in terms of the mitzvah of Alila Regal. But over here, on top of that, there's also Karban Pesach. Do these exemptions also work for Karban Pesach? Now Tosus thinks, obviously, yes. But that isn't so clear-cut. There is much to discuss in the small Tosos, but at least on the daf itself, you see a discussion regarding why isn't Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra in Yerushalayim. Okay, this is the place we're going to pause, and let's quickly recap. First half of today's daf, so we continue our discussion regarding Orla Arbasar, what does it mean? And so when all said and done, we know exactly what it means. It means the night of the 14th, that's the mitzvah to do to do B'dikas Chametz. On the first half of today's daf on Gimel Amud Aleph, so we went through a series of brisas that were extraordinarily clear that the word or, when used in the context of the brisa, and given the right contextual clues, the or means the night of. Why does the Mishnah elect to use the word or, not only here, but in all the examples that we saw this morning? That's the Gemara's next question, which segues into the next part of today's daf. And the answer is because of refined language, meaning for our Masechta to open up using the word Laila, so even though that's accurate and even though that's unambiguous, but at the same time, however, you have a choice, an option of using the word or Laila, so or is uplifting, it's refined, it's light, it's not darkness. Okay, and yes, it did lead to a little bit of ambiguity, and when I say a little bit, a daf and a half, that's a good amount. But still, when all said and done, the refined language is a clear value, and that's why the Mishnah uses the word or. And then the Gemara launched into a lengthy discussion regarding Lishna Ma'alitu's refined language. We talked about the number of letters that the Torah deviated in order to get to refined languages. 8 letters, 9 letters, 10 letters, 16 letters were the Torah refined in order to arrive at a more refined language. We quoted Psukim and Eov that speak to this idea of refined language. When describing a woman riding on an animal, so use the word Moshev as opposed to Merkav. Another example, although the Gemara noted a couple times in Tanakh, we do find the word Merkav being used, but the Gemara explained. If that's true, the Gemara says, so you would expect the Torah never used the word Tameh. The Torah should always use the word Einena Tahora. And meanwhile, the Torah is replete with the word Tameh. So the Gemara says, yeah, that's true, but there's another value, and that is brevity, Lashon Kitsara. So there are two values, and yes, they do compete, and when they do compete, so then go with Lashon Kitsara, but all things being equal, go with the refined language. That's already taking us into the Amud Beis. The Gemara then tells a number of stories of students, Kohanim, who used unrefined language, and they were censored for using unrefined language. And finally, our last discussion for today was regarding the non-Jew who ate Karban Pesach, right? The famed story on Pesachim Dav Gimel. It's good. We're learning right now Pesachim Dav Gimel, so the famed story of the non-Jew eating the Karban Pesach and being tricked by Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra to basically out himself as a non-Jew. And as a result of that, he was put to death. Okay? And I sent you to Rav Mirsky's excellent work, Hagyonei Halacha, in terms of more discussion of understanding why they killed him, or what justified the killing, and him not being in Yerushalayim himself.